I texted him. I'm like, Keith, I think Trump is going to win the national vote. He said, there's no way that's going to happen. There is no way that's going to happen. I'm like, Keith, you are underestimating how popular Trump is. You are underestimating how sick and tired people are with the bullshit.
For the New York Times to be willing to print headlines that talk about how the First Amendment is a threat to our democracy. Like, this is the most boneheaded, un-American idea that I can possibly even imagine.
It's very hard to convey just how unique and how awesome America is, right? But it's awesome because the individual has a path to success that is 100% based on merit. It's on the work you put in gives you results.
I think the thing that I appreciate about you is that you had faith in normal, sane people to be able to come through and to win the day in the face of literally years of the most intense gaslighting campaign I have ever witnessed in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. A winning formula for me has been to always give the people, the average person is smarter than they get credit for. They are much more intelligent than they get credit for. They follow their gut a lot more than they get credit for. And they are able to analyze the situation and act in a rational manner a lot more than they're given credit for. Now, it is also true at the same token that the United States has been under, and the Western world, really, if you really think about it, especially with the dawn of mainstream media, large-scale media, the internet, et cetera, has been under a very real grip of propaganda. That is objectively true from both sides. But the left, this sort of like Western liberal mindset that is the woke mind virus, which we have confirmation. You know, a lot of people, when Elon Musk was talking about this and other players were talking about this, you know, they were kind of worried about conspiratorial. He's kind of, you know, he has fallen off the ledge. He's, you know, he's Howard Hughes-ing all over the place, right? 100% correct. And Kamala Harris and her administration and her campaign was the encapsulation of that movement to the extreme. To the extreme, right? And people grew tired of it. They rejected it. They rejected it en masse in such a violent fashion that when you watch the other side and try to cope with this, they are incapable. I remember my dear friend Keith, we had that wonderful debate with him last week. I texted him, I'm like, Keith, I think Trump is going to win the national vote. He said, there's no way that's going to happen. There is no way that's going to happen. I'm like, Keith, you are underestimating how popular Trump is. You are underestimating how sick and tired people are with the bullshit.
And honestly, a big part of it is not even how popular Donald Trump is. Like, that is a component of it for his base. But honestly, to a bigger extent, it's how unpopular the Biden administration's handling of the last 4 years has been.
True.
Like, people who live in the bubble of progressive politics do not understand how much contempt that they exude for the normal everyday American and how much contempt that we have for them in response. Like, for the New York Times to be willing to print headlines that talk about how the First Amendment is a threat to our democracy. Like, this is the most boneheaded, un-American idea that I can possibly even imagine. And for the people that are talking about threats to our democracy to be actively attacking, like, the core foundations of the founding vision of America as a nation, and think that normal, everyday Americans who love this country aren't going to turn around and say, what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mind blowing, and it's like the people that think they're smarter than they actually are pushing these ideas. That's the core root of this issue. Is we have a segment of the population who have an elitist attitude, who are typically, you know, let's say educated, but in this day and age, and I'm sorry to say, in this day and age, educated really just means propagandized. Like you haven't really been taught how to critically think and how to be a free thinker and analyze what's in front of you. You have been taught and trained to act and spit information based on a predetermined set of rules that you cannot break away from. You live in a closed loop, and you cannot break out of it. And this is how these people operate.
The definition of DEI is how to get people of all different backgrounds, skin colors, nationalities, religions, to all think, say, and believe the exact same thing. And if they don't, they become the most egregious examples of and objects of hatred by the system.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And these folks have infiltrated way too many places in our society, primarily around the dissemination of information. It just so happened that there was a Venn diagram overlap of people who are incapable of breaking out of this closed loop type of thinking and having the ability to propagate information en masse, right? And then either on purpose or by accident, there was a marriage between the left of the political spectrum, and then those people, they became very, very closely tied instead of one being critical of each other, of the other, because at that point you have to go against your preconceived notions and your biases, right? Because you come from that group. And what happens? They become sort of intertwined very closely, and then they start propagating this garbage onto the nation. And here's the thing that I think at the root of it gets completely miscategorized. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
I was just going to say this is garbage that only is able to survive in the light of day because it is birthed in a place that is completely shielded from reality.
Yes.
Like these liberal arts colleges, especially the ones like Harvard and Yale that have these huge endowments and this massive, you know, prestige and all this stuff, that the professors and students there, you know, live in a world that is in 100% insulated from the reality of most people. And ideas are able to take root there that don't have to make contact with the real world in their formative stage. And then they can think that these ideas are great ideas when in fact, you know, any person who, you know, exists in the real world knows that's baloney sauce.
Yeah.
But then it gets into the minds of people that then go on out of that incubator into positions of influence and power and get to start, you know, enacting those ideas in ways that are very destructive. And, you know, a lot of them from a place of mostly good intentions, but, you know, the power and the influence that goes along with it, you know, that certainly doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that the total disconnect with the fact that the United States is a very moderate country. It is a very moderate country and is significantly to the right in the Western world because of its large immigrant population. I think this is like the point that always gets like misconstrued, right?
Because the founding vision of the country is the founding vision of immigrants.
Yeah. Who escaped tyranny and escaped being controlled, being authoritarian governments by default. The way this country was made is to reject establishment thinking. And the Democrats are establishment to the maximum. To the maximum. Kamala's appointment, non-election primary, is the definition of establishment. It's the definition of establishment. And you're telling me this, that somehow this candidate was going to win in 2024. There's no fucking way. No fucking
way. She wasn't
way.
Even going to win in 2020. That's why she didn't make it.
Yeah. In her home. That's why she was one of the worst polling candidates in her home state. Like, people forget that.
Literally, like, one of the first candidates in the Democratic primary in 2020 to get knocked out.
Drop out. Awful. Awful. Man.
And the other part of the immigrant ethos that is at the foundation of this nation isn't the immigrant ethos of, I want to go someplace where they're going to give me a bunch of stuff and, like, I'm going to be given handouts to where I can make my life what I want it to be. They were looking for a place where they had freedom to be successful if they could create that success themselves.
Yes.
And that fierce independence and desire for liberty, which comes with tremendous responsibility, is a unique value of the United States in comparison with, you know, most other Western. I mean, there's no other Western nation that has that at the founding. And certainly there's no place like this on earth.
So unique. It is so, like, this election is such a reminder of that, you know? And I think like, as an immigrant, like, as somebody that came from Europe, you know, my parents, for those that are not familiar, my parents, I don't know if you can tell from the way I look, my parents are born and raised in Iran. They fled the revolution in 79.
I can't believe you would betray us and not vote for Kamala.
Sorry. I was part of the very small minority group that voted Trump. It's okay. So my parents fled the revolution in 79. They moved to Spain. That's where they had me. And then we moved to the States when I was 12 from Spain. Okay. And we came here for the American dream, and my parents made it work. And it's amazing, right? My life is a trillion times better because of their sacrifice twice. They moved to two different countries twice, and they had to learn the language from scratch both times. Okay. Crazy. Like, unbelievable. Like, unbelievable what they did to secure a good life for me and my brother and for themselves. The kind of person, like, I think if you don't go through that experience, if you don't step outside of the United States, especially if you're somebody who has had a lot of success in the United States and is used to the United States, okay, it's very hard to convey just how unique and how awesome America is, right? But it's awesome because the individual has a path to success that is 100% based on merit. It's on the work you put in gives you results. There is no blockades. There is no, like, lack of opportunities. You can go out and fucking get it. If you really want to work hard and get it, you can get it, okay? And that is enabled by having an open and free society where you reward people based on what they do. And what the Democrats have been trying to do, they've been trying to layer on roadblocks. Yep. Why are you doing that? It does, like it's insanity. Like, you have completely lost the plot. You have lost the plot as to why this country is as good as great as it is. And the most encouraging part of this election is that it's obvious, it's clear and obvious that the spirit of America, which is rejecting establishment, is alive and well, even in a day and age where the level of propaganda out there and the level of control and the level of outright, almost like evil behavior from a lot of these groups, even either by accident or on purpose, is amplified tremendously by technology. It has survived that, and it survived that in spades. Okay, but one fucking person, right? One person. I really do think, and, you know, we definitely give Elon his props on this channel, but I do, like, would this have happened without Elon buying X?
Dude, I don't know.
I really don't think so.
You know, we told people that this was going to be a huge deal before it ever happened. And, like, we have the receipts. You can go back on the channel and you can watch the conversations that we were having around that. I continue to go back to it. And it's not like Joe Rogan says this. There are so many people, Mark Andreessen, Naval, like having the ability to openly discuss the truth as we see it from our own perspectives and have the brawl of a debate and conversation that exists on X in its own very unique, special, really messed up way is the process by which we can think. And a lot of that thinking is wrong. But if you're willing to subject the ideas to enough battle testing, the truth really does rise to the top. And I mean, that's why it is so unacceptable to the establishment political class that such a thing exists, because we almost always come to a conclusion that is different than the appointed narrative that we're supposed to believe. And that is the most dangerous misinformation and disinformation that must be censored, is the things that are true, like COVID-19 was almost with 95%+ certainty a lab leak. Those things may not be spoken ever.
Unbelievable.
Anywhere, by anyone, no matter how credentialed you are. You could be a Stanford-educated virologist with deep subject matter expertise. And if you say the unsayable truth, you must be canceled.
How fucking crazy is that in hindsight? Like, it's been discussed on different podcasts multiple times, right? That it is so unbelievable that that actually happened. That we knew what the truth was, and the government said, you are not allowed.
Not allowed to say the truth.
You're not allowed to say the truth, and we will punish you if you say the truth. And social media companies 100% went along with it.
And the
they did.
More sinister thing about it wasn't that we don't think it's true, and so we think it needs to be suppressed because we actually believe the truth is this other thing.
Right.
No, they had to suppress it because the people who were making the decisions about what can and cannot be said actually knew that it was true, and it was a very inconvenient truth for them.
Yeah. Malinformation, Hans. It was malinformation. Yep. It was when you say the truth, but the truth is damaging. And thus we have to stop the truth from happening. And yep. and the core group of people that make that decision, they're the ones who control the narrative for society. How is, dude, 1984 was legit a thing. And it could still be a thing. But I think I really do think this election is going to break a lot of those shackles. You know,
we have to wait and see.
We have to wait and see if that actually happens. But it feels very hopeful. It feels like big change is coming.
Maybe this is a good place to transition into the concerns, because I do like we are. I think there's a lot of reason to be hopeful.
Yeah.
As we talked about with Keith, I think the chances of that system being willing to make the necessary changes to allow liberty, which is the core foundation on which America's ability to be a shining beacon on a hill for the rest of the world exists, is allowed to continue for everyday Americans. Like, that just was not going to happen under a Harris administration. They were going to continue to tighten down the screws and suffocate this nation by a whole host of measures. Now, does that mean that Donald Trump can really make those changes? Well, I certainly have concerns about his ability to do that, given the fact that he was in office for 4 years and he did some good things, but it certainly didn't prevent 2020 from happening. It certainly didn't prevent COVID. The response to COVID itself was
lackluster. At best.
At best. And, you know, there's a whole number of points of concern that, you know, we might have with him. But I'll tell you what, the the group that he has around him now sure gives me a lot different vibes than the people that were around him in 2016. And so that's exciting. But what I would really like to see moving forward, as, you know, from a libertarian perspective, is that people like Ron Paul and Elon Musk and Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr., who are all in favor of identifying corrupt aspects of the United States government in their own way and surgically removing those from our society. I hope that those people are given latitude to do that. That is not power that gets invested in any of the institutions that then exists as a tool that can continue to be used to grow bureaucracy, grow spending, grow government, grow invasiveness into the lives of everyday Americans on behalf of any political constituency, Republican or Democrat. Like, my hope is that we can legitimately reduce the amount of influence and impact that the government has on everybody's life permanently, and not create tools to do that that can then be used in reverse to really harm Americans in the next administration, the administration after that, the administration after that, because that's the general pattern that has gotten us to the point that we're at today, is that each new administration finds excuses to create new tools. And it is this buildup of layered tools upon layered tools over time that creates the swamp. And, you know, on one hand, you could say the swamp is the people with bad motives doing bad things in Washington, D.C. And I think that when you have a system that's that complicated, I don't know that any human being can face that complicated of a system and be able to identify what the correct mode of operation is to achieve the desired outcome for people. And so that's the concern that we definitely have for Elon. Like, how does Elon go about enacting the Department of Government Efficiency and cutting through red tape, cutting through regulations, eliminating agencies, and also maintain his neutral? Like, it's going to be a conflict of interest for him in a number of cases in doing that, because he's got so many companies that do so many different things. And a lot of the agencies that are going to be need to be cut are going to be agencies that actually have a direct impact on his companies.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you manage the proper reduction of whether it's the number of agencies or the number of regulations themselves to something that is sensible in a way that is fair and reasonably impartial? That's going to be a hard challenge. And then the other thing is, you know, while the people that we're excited about are Tulsi, RFK Jr., Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, these Ron types Paul. Of people, Ron Paul,
Joe Rogan, Dana
Joe White. Rogan. Yeah.
The fucking Avengers for real.
We haven't had a cabinet be put in place yet. And, you know, it's not impossible that we could have more of the same like we had last time. You know, if Mike Pompeo is brought in again, and, you know, a number of either neocon, like outright neocons or neocon adjacent people, or just swamp establishment people who are able to frustrate and slow down the efforts that we need to see as Americans to get back to a place where our government actually works and works for the people by giving the people freedom, not restricting freedom.
Yeah. I think the signal that we need to look for that actually happening is the how violent of a change they'll put in place and how quickly they'll start ripping off bandages, right? I don't think this is something they can do like...
Oh, like the first 2 months are going to be... I mean, chaos. Even Trump's first term, like what he did when he got in there immediately and got to work, like that set a tone. He did a lot in those first 90 days. And if you know Elon Musk, and if Elon Musk has a say, like he's not going to wait until minute two. He's going to start, hit the ground running.
He's probably already doing it.
Oh, 100%.
Behind the scenes. He's already getting it set up. That's what gets me so excited. That it truly does get me excited, because I think in the case of Elon Musk, we have somebody that we study very closely. We know how he runs his businesses. We understand the kind of culture he sets. I think one of the things that's underrated about him is his way to inspire the groups around him. Like, you bet your ass, if he actually does execute against this and he's able to make change, your Vivek's, RFK's, Tulsi's, et cetera, are going to be like, holy shit, is this actually how you get shit done? Like, because this is a unique skill set that he possesses that nobody else does, and very few people do, and most people have no idea what the secret sauce actually is. Like, unless you've worked with him or worked at his companies, you don't really understand what the secret sauce is. Like, you have an idea, you have a way to do it, right? But now he's going to do it at the government, at the United States federal level, bro. How is that not an incredibly exciting thought? Truly. Oh,
it is both, you know, for you and I, this is incredibly exciting. This is also incredibly terrifying.
Let's go.
Oh, it's going to be great. You know, one of the things that I actually was incredibly shocked and surprised by in a pleasant way, and I look forward to hopefully seeing this in the government context, is the fact that Elon didn't end up having to fire 100% of Twitter. Like, the incredibly talented, motivated, smart, capable, like,
they're all in there,
killer team that X is today, almost all those people were at old Twitter, existing in that literal hellhole of a system. And all he had to do was like turn up the flames, make it really hot, let the ones who were wussies jump out early on, and then whittle it down from there until he was able to just like refine that group of people down to rock stars and killers. And like, and probably people that weren't even necessarily killers to begin with, but they just were able to rise to the occasion once they were set free. Like, that was so cool. And I like, those people exist inside the United States government.
They do. 100%.
And I think there probably existed a much greater percentage than that, you know, the 20% of people that are left at X. It's probably 50, 60, 70, 80% of the people. Now, 80% of the people aren't going to survive all the cuts. And, you know, that's okay. Like, there can be some really good people that get set free back into the private sector to do productive things for society. But, like, I'm excited about true American patriots who love this country, who have a variety of different political perspectives and ideas about how we should really be conducting this American experiment, given the right operating conditions. I think that we can get back to being the most kick-ass nation the world has ever seen.
Dude, like, and it's gonna be great. Yeah. It's gonna be great. And I think what gives me a lot of confidence that he'll be able to do it is that, you know, him and his team, it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very painful. But he has a track record of doing this across multiple industries. And some of them in heavily regulated industries, like the car market, right? Like, it's not normal for a person to start a car company. That's literally the dumbest thing ever. You have to be an idiot to start a car company.
It's the second dumbest thing ever. The only thing that's dumber is starting a space company.
Yeah, that's number one dumbest idea of all time. But so that's great. I think the people that will drive the change and the people that will make government a lot more efficient and better for the people and actually serve the country in the way that the public servant sort of like the way that position was designed to be done, let's say, or the people that are working for the government so that they can actually make the government more active and more responsive to the people. 100% agree. All those people are in there. Literally, all you have to do is delete. That's all you have to do. That's the beauty behind this thing is you just have to go in there and delete. You just got to delete the Roblox. Yeah,
and you got to delete deep. You got to delete so deep that it hurts a lot, and then you start putting back.
Yeah, and it could be as simple as Elon threw out giving people a severance package, right? All you have to do is send a federal, like literally send it to every single group in the federal government and be like, hey, just so you know, the next 4 years are going to be brutal. Like that X email, the next 4 years are going to be brutal. We are going to make the government extremely responsive for the people. And we know that there is a giant amount of waste that the taxpayers are losing money on. And we need to make sure that the public is getting their money's worth. With that said, if you are up for the challenge of making the federal government a lot better and more responsive for the people, okay? Then
if you want to be super ultra hardcore in doing that, then
yeah, if you
reply to this email.
Yeah, reply
say,
to
yes,
this
I'm
email.
In.
I'm in. If not, no hard feelings. Thank you so much for your hard work. Here's 2 years severance, right? 2 years severance. You have everything you need. You can have more than enough
Thank
time to
you
find
for
a
your
job.
Service. Have
Thank
a nice
you for
life.
Your service. Have a nice life. What percentage of that group is going to take the 2 year severance? I'm willing to bet like 60%.
A bunch.
Yeah, like 60%. So immediately you're going to delete the unmotivated, and then the other 40% is going to be the I kind of need money. I want to make a difference. Maybe I do want to be part of this, right? But I don't know if I have the metal to be part of it, right? And then 50% of those are going to get burned out and thrown out. So immediately you're left with 20%, right there. And then that 20%
is going
to be incredibly
effective. A lot
of the family
people who have competing priorities and aren't willing to put in the time and the effort that it's going to take, like he's going to, it's going to be brutal.
It's going to be incredible. It's going to be incredible. It's the best. Dude, like, how many stories have you heard of, like, I don't know if you have friends or family in government, but every single person that I know that works for government, it's always the same. No one does any work. It's impossible to get fired. And everyone has the
best.
And
it's impossible to get anything done because getting something done shines a light on how much everyone else sucks at their job.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a union job in a lot of places, honestly, you know? So, man, that's so exciting. Oh, that's so exciting. It's so exciting, you know? And you know how that, dude, and you know, if you're legacy media, you're foaming at the mouth here because now the kind of stories you can run. Elon Musk and Donald Trump are destroying the livelihood of government workers.
Told you they were going to destroy democracy. And look, they're doing it. They're firing all the Democrats.
Yes. Their fascist fingers are just destroying the federal government. And they are removing so many resources and bandwidth that people will literally die. People will literally die. Right? Yep. That's the kind of headline we're going to get.
Yep.
And you and I are going
to
sit
just
there.
Like X was literally going to cease to exist. Collapse. And people were,
And lo and behold, it was one of them.
On the death of this platform.
X went from being a platform that was on the cusp of dying to being probably the biggest reason why Donald Trump got elected in 2024. Comeback story.
Who could have predicted it?
Yeah, it was impossible to see. Hans, there was no previous track record. This was a brand new thing that's never happened before.
So much more complicated than rockets and cars.
Yeah, it's just way more complicated. And listen, it's never been done before, Hans. It's never been done before. And
he doesn't
the guy
have nearly
that was,
enough marketing degrees.
He doesn't have enough marketing degrees. He doesn't have an MBA. And he is just a stupid person. He's a con man. and he has low IQ, and he's going to suck. He's going to be very bad at it, and that's what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yep.
Dude,
he has terrible taste in hiring too. Like, yeah, I don't know how he was able to get those, you know, smart people to do things at Tesla and SpaceX. But he'll definitely,
yeah,
be
really, really
bad. Again.
Yeah, he's actually incredibly sexist too, because all the leaders at his companies are women too. You know, the board at Tesla is a woman. The CEO of SpaceX is a woman. The operations manager, operations leader of SpaceX or X is, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the CEO of X. Yeah.
Thank you.
COO of SpaceX and CEO of X.
Obviously hates men. Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously hates men, and he's a terrible person. And he's white, so he's automatically an oppressor. Okay, Hans? He's the worst.
The great Satan.
Okay. So, man. Oh, fuck. Like, dude. Like, it's so crazy. Like, I can't believe this actually happened. I can't believe,
like,
this actually happened.
I just can't stop thinking about Elon's statement that the most entertaining outcome from a third-party observer perspectives is the most likely. Like,
yeah.
I cannot think of anything more entertaining in the soap opera of Earth 2020s.
Yeah. I've never,
this.
Bro, RFK Jr. is in charge of the medical corruption of the United States. Come on. And the food corruption of the United States. And Tulsi is going to tackle the industrial complex and the forever
neocon forever war system.
Bro. And Ron and Elon are going to team up and tackle inefficiency in government.
We might kill the friggin' Fed.
One can hope. I think that might be a little, well, we'll see. You never know.
Today is Hopium Day.
Yeah, today's hope. Today we get to go, like, we're really happy with what happened. We again, dude, like, just the overwhelming response by the American people is what gives me so much hope. It's like the majority of the people see what we see. They see it, and they're silent, but they're loud. They're silent, but they're powerful, dude. They are so powerful. The people are so fucking powerful, bro. It's so awesome.
Freedom, baby.
Yeah, America. Fuck yeah.
I'm not going to sing the next words.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we'll almost have to, like, digest a little bit more and come back on Friday.
I'm excited and nervous. Yeah.
And
we'll see what the next steps look like. I mean,
yeah.
The other thing that I've been digesting is the implications, like you said, you know, if Trump wins, it's basically a once and for all, like, line in the sand that the power of legacy media is done.
Dead.
Like, you know, it's still, it's like GM. It's going to take a few years before the death rattle can finally calm down and that whole thing will stop moving. It'll be a zombie for a while, but the fever dream has broken. And
dude, legacy, everything is dying.
And Elon's tweet that you are the media now, like,
it's true.
It's true.
It's so true.
You and I are the media now. And Joe Rogan and...
Are we sure that's a good thing?
No, it's a terrible thing. That's what makes it so ridiculous that it's still that much better than what we had before.
I know. Yeah. I can never get over the fact that the reason why you and I have the platform that we have is because legacy media is garbage. It's so bad. It's so fucking bad. Hans, you and I have a podcast together and people watch and listen to this shit. Okay?
Like, we're literally nobody from nowhere. And like, we're not like, we're goofy and ridiculous.
Yeah.
This whole last 45 minutes has just been the dumbest, most ridiculous babble. And it's still better than watching The View.
World better.
CNBC.
Yeah.
MSNBC. All these shows.
Yeah.
Even Fox, you know, like all of it.
Dude, podcast. I the golden age of podcasts is here. The golden age of, I just posted on X a few minutes, like before we went live. And it's such an easy prediction to make, I think. In 2028, Joe Rogan's going to host a debate between the two presidential candidates for 4 hours.
And that will follow on the heels of at least long-form conversations with every single candidate on the All In podcast, if not even hosted debates on the All In podcast.
Yeah, and Lex Fridman is going to do his own debate. You're going to have these like different people, respected people.
And each format shows a different side of each candidate that comes through. Like, this is the new actually democratic vetting process of people who don't suck.
Yes, 100%. 100%. You know what's one thing? One thing I hope Trump does too? I don't know if how realistic this is, but just host like a live stream or a space once a month, once a quarter with the people of the United States and just talk to them for like a couple hours. Just bring up at random. Just talk to people. You know how Elon does this thing with spaces? He's just like, he just brings up randos. Like Donald Trump would benefit from doing that. And dude, there was a comment that I heard. Rogan had the guys from Trigonometry on. Constantine and what's the other gentleman's name? I forget his name. Anyway, I forget their names, but great podcast. Go check them out. Sorry, guys. If you ever want to come on, I'll remember your names. But one of the guys made a comment that really like resonated with me. And he said that moving forward, the presidential candidates we're going to have are no longer going to be these like media clipped personalities that are optimized for rapid fire answers. They're going to be people that are going to be able to sit down in front of a podcast for 3-4 hours and just talk off script from their dome. Imagine it like, and so the caliber of person you're not going to have running for president is going to be completely different.
This is how America used to operate before TV was a thing, that presidential candidates had to go around from major city to major city. And they would have like legitimate multi-hour debates. Like the two presidential candidates would have long debates.
Yeah.
And just go back and forth and duke it out. And then they go to the next city and they would have a different debate. You know, like a lot of it's going to be similar, but you know, the talking points are not going to be the same. Like it's going to be this ongoing in-depth debate on the issues that travels around the country. And that was the process for electing someone like Abe Lincoln. And the voters made their decision based on they went and they listened to this type of series of stump speeches or debate. And then they made their decision. Yeah. And like they could have the attention span to just sit there and not only hear this long debate, but follow it, be able to tell who's winning and who's not, keep the whole, you know, mental model of what is the argument that we're having even about, and how is that relevant to us in our lives? And, and they probably read some pamphlets from whatever the results of the last one were that made it to them. So they're kind of up to speed on, okay, this is what we're talking about today. And like, there definitely was a level of engagement and education in the electorate and the political process in the late 1700s and early 1800s that really puts us to shame today. And this is a topic that Neil Postman writes a lot about. And I think podcasting is the medium for the digital age that revives a lot of that dynamic. And you know, if you just think about our evolutionary history, for the vast majority of all of the time that humans have been on Earth, we didn't have writing at our disposal to record ideas and save them and pass them down to other people, whether, you know, future generations of ourselves or just the guy who lives in the town, you know, 10 miles away. It was all oral, and we have this extremely well-developed evolutionary capacity for this exact type of thing. And it's kind of this weird historical anomaly that we've kind of lost touch with it through the development of radio and TV. Well, not necessarily radio, mostly TV. And then things like TikTok really just destroy our brains. But then you get this incredible barbell distribution of like the most clickbaity possible content on TikTok that's, you know, 10 to 60 seconds long, that you're just inundated with dopamine, or 3-hour Joe Rogan podcasts or 4-hour Tim Ferriss podcasts, or, you know, our new genre of TV shows that can be 10, 20, 30 hours of one continuous story arc that just gets developed to the nth degree. And that, like, we can have our fun on the TikTok side, and then we can actually have our brain food at a level that we haven't had for decades.
So true. Yeah. And so what does the alternative mean? So because we haven't had that, by default, we have presidential candidates that are much more actors than anything. They're politicians who look good for a short period of time, and they're optimized to look good for a short period of time, which is like by default a clickbait approach. Every line they say is optimized to get the largest amount of engagement, and it's total avoidance of saying the wrong thing. You know, and that's amusing ourselves to death.
People need to read this book if they haven't. This is, you know, this is the one that I was talking about. This is Neil Postman, and his prediction. This was written, I don't know, it may have been written in the 80s, but he had been talking about this subject matter for a long time. And he was predicting that everyone in media, especially news and politics, was going to be corrupted by the medium of TV and become these vapid vessels of entertainment that prioritized looks and aura over substance, and that we as a society were going to suffer for it. And his predictions have come incredibly true. That, you know, that what he realized was that it was going to be far more important how believable and trustable that your news anchor was than whether or not they said actually true things.
Yeah.
That the, you know, that he tracked the fact that the people who were the most accurate and unbiased and truthful sources of news, if they didn't look like the most beautiful Hollywood actor or actress while delivering that, they would be eviscerated by the person who looked and sounded just the right way to earn your trust.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, exactly what we have been suffering from. And we have, like, people are so surprised, you know, the corporate media has been lying to us about, you know, almost everything for as long as we can remember when we actually look into the details of things. Well, that apparently was baked into the medium of TV and was always the inevitable outcome.
Yeah. Which reinforces, I think, the theory that we've been propagandized for a lot longer than we think. This is not a new phenomenon. Like, this has been going on for decades. We just didn't, we were completely unaware of it early on.
Yeah.
And now we've become aware of it.
I mean, there are certain elements of the fairness doctrine that really did help to survive, like, protect the journalistic integrity of news media organizations. And, you know, in a, there are definitely ways that you can criticize the Why am I blanking on his name? The news guy from the
70s. Cronkite.
Yeah, Walter Cronkite. Like, there were probably some editorial decisions about what we're spoken about that had a distorting effect on the public's understanding. But, you know, the fairness doctrine really did a lot to preserve journalism for a lot longer and mitigate some of these types of concerns that we're talking about. But as the medium evolves and as some of those safeguards lose their ability to be effective in, you know, a new environment as the technology changes, then you do fall prey to all of those, you know, those dynamics that Neil Postman warned us about.
Yeah. Prophetic. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. How cool is it that we actually have a return to what it used to be, which generated these epic candidates for president, like Abe Lincoln, right?
Yep.
Like, just all these different examples that we can go through that.
Theodore Roosevelt. What a total badass.
Badass, dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the founding fathers, JFK. Like all of them.
Yeah.
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 You know? Which was, the JFK one is interesting because that was kind of like at the beginning of the age of TV.
Yeah. And right? his looks, like he definitely looked the part, and that was a big, he was one of the first candidates to fully take advantage of the medium of TV by being, you know, not only the, like, he came from the right heritage, he spoke the right way, he was charming and handsome and all the things, but then also had a lot of substance to him and is still, you know, one of my, well, I wouldn't say one, he's my favorite president from the 20th century. I can't think of anyone more respectable and for his core, I mean, not necessarily in his family life, but in the, his patriotism in leading our country and preventing a nuclear Holocaust.
Yeah. That's how you know you're talking to a history buff, is when they have a favorite president of the 20th century. Each century gets its own favorite president. I love it. Yeah, man. Wild times. I need a hard stop here. I got to go